A revenue forecast delivers good news and bad news. Pete Buttigieg won't run for re-election in South Bend. That plus how Curtis Hill will pay for his legal defense and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 21st, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a new state revenue forecast gave lawmakers good news and bad news. The good news, Indiana will have more than $800 million new dollars in the next state budget. The bad news, that's not enough to pay for what state officials want. If you combine the Department of Child Services budget request with predicted new Medicaid funding, state lawmakers will have just a few million dollars in new revenue left over to divvy up between all other requests for spending increases. Republican Senate Budget Architect Ryan Mishler says not everybody will get what they want.
We need to meet with DCS and figure out a way to lower that number and be a little more efficient.
At risk for the chopping block, any increase in education funding, which, as Democratic Senator Karen Tallien points out, is supposed to help deliver teacher pay raises.
I don't buy that there's no money for teacher pay. I don't buy it.
Tallien says the governor, for instance, has $1 billion over the next 2 years from a renegotiated toll road deal that she thinks should go into the budget. Are lawmakers in a bind with the upcoming state budget? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is there just not enough money to go around?
There's enough money. I mean, they had enough money to go in on a one-day session and cut corporate taxes another $180 million. Yeah, there's enough money. It's just a question of priorities. We don't need to study teacher salaries. We know teachers in many communities in Indiana are paid too little. And we need to do something about that. We're at the bottom quadrant of states in terms of what we pay teachers. And some of them are making no more than they would be at a warehouse job. And we ask them to have master's degrees. It's ridiculous. We've got to step up. If we're going to get quality people to continue to go into education, we need to make teacher salaries a priority. The Republicans haven't done that.
We talked last week on the show about the DCS's proposed budget, and we didn't even really spend time on the idea of if they would get the money, because it was just, oh, of course they're going to get the money. Are they going to get the money?
Well, Senator Mishler, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, really kind of pushed back and said we're going to need to maybe find some savings here. The argument is this is the increase because it's based on what they're already what they've already had
right.
to increase in spending.
They've been calling it the true up.
Kind of the true up. They've had to revert money from other state agencies to try to fill this hole and make some progress. They've raised caseworker salaries and done some other things to spend money in that system. Foster care is up 23%, or adoptions are up 23% because they've invested more money in those areas.
And caseloads are down.
So we're seeing progress in the data out of that agency in a very short amount of time. But look, the problem with the budget, people look at the big number, the $32 billion number, and then they go, oh, the legislature's going to decide how to spend that. Almost all of that has already decided how we're going to spend it. It's automatic spending on Medicaid, which increased by hundreds of millions of dollars in this forecast. In part because we have more people on that program than we've ever had before. DCS money, K-12, we're going to have to go find increased money. Key legislators have already said we're going to have to go find more money for K-12 education for teacher pay increases. But K-12 education is 55% of the budget on day one, right? I mean, that money's already spent. So there's a very small margin that legislators are going to have to work with. Truly discretionary.
How tight is this really going to get by the time we get to April?
It's tight, but keep it in perspective. This time a year ago, now granted it was not a budget year, but every year for all practical purposes now is a spending a budget year. There was a $400 million shortfall in terms of where people thought the state would be heading into the session,
the
2018 session, and things sort of stabilized. We laugh about getting over this hurdle with the revenue forecast, and everybody was so eager to find out what it was going to say. But now, in an odd way, now attention turns to what you just mentioned, Brandon, the the April update. And so you wonder if, how many times will we hear between now and then? Well,
before we can be sure
that we want to do this, we need to see those April numbers. So it's now just kind of starting the clock over.
Mike mentioned the idea of the kind of built-in, okay, we have to increase education funding. And the way they're going to do it for teacher pay this year seems to be in part by just giving an overall education
funding
increase.
Well, it's the way they've done it for all of history. I mean, that's how they've done it.
But if they can only afford to do a roughly inflationary rise in education spending, is that going to turn into teacher
I mean, that's going to be the big question. Because, you know, if they give 2% and it doesn't even cover inflation, I don't know how you can really look yourself in the eye as a lawmaker and say, well, of course they should be able to raise teacher salaries with that, when you're not even covering the increase in keeping the lights on or, you know, stuff like
healthcare,
that. So, I mean, just eking out a 2% overall education funding increase is going to be hard to swallow.
We talked last week about how teacher pay, it's got to be all in. It's got to be everyone from lawmakers to taxpayers to school superintendents and school boards, because they all have a role in that decision. So you look at IPS, they announced a 6% increase in teacher pay because of the referendum that local voters approved and are now reinvesting in their local school district. So, yes, it's the school funding formula, the big number that flows down to the school district, but communities are really going to have to start looking at, is this a priority for us too? Do we have to put pressure on our school board? Do we have to put pressure on our superintendent? And do we have to ultimately approve these referenda that put more money into the system outside of what the state invests?
I thought the state was supposed to provide all the operating expenses for schools. Like, wasn't that Mitch Daniels' cornerstone?
No, well, they added this referendum. No, they added this option for referendum that if you wanted to spend money and make
option.
It,
which is yeah, important, but that was not supposed to be used as an ongoing thing each year to do this.
Well, if we thought there was some grumbling and murmurs about the intended use of the $1 billion that the governor secured through the toll road deal that allowed the toll road operator to bump up fees on trucks about 30%, 30+%. You know, people were saying
you don't get that billion. You don't get that billion every year, though.
You don't get that billion every year, but that doesn't mean.
But he can't spend it by himself.
But that doesn't mean people are going to say that's going to be cited early and often as at least something that could help teachers.
Right.
Stave off a critical situation. Well, some would say it's already a critical situation.
There's no second increase. It's not like we can come back in 2020 and go, all right, we need another $1 billion.
That's when the economy grows. That's when the economy booms.
Yeah, you were going to grow us out of it. Remember, that's what Trump was going to do, assuming he doesn't crash the economy between now and April.
Well, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced this week he will not seek a third term next year. Pete Buttigieg's tenure as mayor of South Bend will end next year after he was first elected in 2011, then 29 years old and the youngest mayor in the country of a city of at least 100,000 people. The Democrats' latest decision potentially clears the path for a presidential run in 2020, something many have speculated since the Hoosier star has been on the rise nationally over the last 2 years. That includes several trips to Iowa, a forthcoming book, and a piece in the New York Times that dubbed him America's first gay president. For now, Buttigieg won't say anything about his political future, but he did say that while he'll use the remainder of his term, quote, to its absolute maximum, he acknowledged that office holders can also be candidates. Mike O'Brien, Buttigieg for president 2020?
Sure looks like it's going that direction. So one of the only truly, I think, credible Democrats and left on the bench in Indiana is leaving to go to Iowa. So I don't know where that leaves the Indiana Democratic Party, again, without really anybody to run but names we've already heard of. But I think for a guy that young to have made this much progress and create a national profile is pretty impressive. I mean, he ran for DNC chairman and really impressed a lot of people. He's going to Iowa, and there's good reports from Democrats coming out of there. Yep. And it's a heck of a contrast in a Democratic field. And what was he, 50 years younger than Bernie Sanders? So, I mean, if you're a newly engaged Democrat, and there are a lot of newly engaged Democrats who are going to be involved in this process, you kind of look at this and go, I don't know, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, maybe, why not Pete Buttigieg, right? So it'll be fun to see how it turns out. It's a smart move for him, if nothing else, to build the profile and maybe land in a cabinet position or leverage this into something else.
I want to talk about something Mike just said, though, because it's something I thought, too. It seemed like Pete Buttigieg might have been a really good gubernatorial candidate for Indiana Democrats in 2020.
I don't know that we've necessarily ruled that out, have we?
No, we haven't.
And on top of that, in contrast to what Mike said, we have a number of really good Democratic mayors in the cities across the state who are prepared to continue governing at the local level. I think it's good. I think Mike's right. It's good not only for Pete Buttigieg, but I think it's good for Hoosiers to have somebody on the Democratic side out there articulating the values and the concerns that we have in this state on the national level. And it certainly can't hurt him to be talked about, as he has been talked about, as a serious candidate. You know, nobody thought that Barack Obama would ever wind up president either. So, you know, these are different times now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, how much, Mike kind of alluded to this, how much is maybe a Pete Buttigieg run for president really a run for vice president or the cabinet? Yeah.
Well, I mean, those things are always a possibility, but you have to put your name out there in order to build a profile. And he's an attractive candidate. I mean, he's obviously incredibly intelligent. He's run that city well. He's a veteran, you know.
Rhodes Scholar.
Yep, Rhodes Scholar. He brings, you know, credentials that, you know, most Democrats should be excited to at least see how they are embraced or not.
Is a Pete Buttigieg run for president, though, hurt the local Indiana Democratic Party?
I'm not so sure that's the case. I think if anything, it might stir enthusiasm. Now, granted, he would not necessarily be running for president, I guess that kind of represents everybody, right?
But In theory.
But I think when you have somebody, a native son, that might make waves, and he's got a ways to go. You know, there was a Des Moines Register poll this week, a straw poll that had a bunch of candidates listed, and he was not included
make
the cut. So he needs to, there are a few hurdles he needs to overcome. But I think it could be sort of fuel for Hoosier Democrats to say that, hey, we're relevant on the national scene as well as maybe in Indianapolis.
In 2 years is about four lifetimes in
that's true.
In national
politics. Is there any worry for Democrats about holding on to the South Bend mayor's seat?
Nope.
That's probably right.
Wow.
Call my broker.
Yeah, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg run for president in 2020? A yes or B, no. Last week's question, is Mike Pence to blame for the tense Oval Office exchange between President Trump and Democratic leaders? 17% say yes, 83% say no, he is not. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, an Indianapolis Star report this week says records suggest Attorney General Curtis Hill plans to use public money for his legal defense. Curtis Hill faces sexual misconduct allegations from a state lawmaker and three legislative staffers. A special prosecutor decided not to bring criminal charges, but the four women filed federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission claims against him and took steps to file civil charges in state court. Documents obtained by The Star show Hill's office is working to create a contract with private attorney Kevin Batts, who's helped represent Hill since the misconduct allegations first came to light. The AG's office says Batts has been working for free so far, but a Hill spokesperson wouldn't say how the embattled state office holder plans to pay future legal bills if a civil suit moves forward. Nikki Kelly, Kevin Batts has come out and said he will not take any public dollars in the defense of Curtis Hill around these misconduct allegations.
Well, part of this problem is we're sort of lumping it all together. But the fact is if the EEOC claims and the civil lawsuit are filed against the Attorney General's office as a state office, then we do have a responsibility to protect Indiana taxpayers against a lawsuit against a person in their official capacity. Now, that might eventually be thrown out, but these claims have been filed against him not only in his personal capacity, but also as the state office.
Right. A tort claim is, it would be state taxpayers
Correct.
Paying out that money, not Curtis Hill.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, is this not necessarily as bad as it looks on its face?
Well,
yeah.
I think I know Ann's answer, but John.
I mean, that is the valid explanation, but I wonder how much of that actually seeps through when you just, you know, are reading a headline or just hearing a conversation where it might have said, gee, do you know we taxpayers are ponying up money to pay for the defense of X, Y, and Z? That probably is not the best look, even though you're right, Nikki, it is it is probably legitimate
in
the
sense, in part,
that if in fact the
it's the office,
the defendant is the office. As a, I mean, I'm not sure how else you could frame that. I mean, you're not going to have a GoFundMe site to do a state, represent a state agency, I suppose, or a state office. Well, no. Maybe
there's a GoFundMe for the border wall.
So why didn't I think of that? I could be retired right now.
GOP leaders have said now that they're not going to do anything about Curtis Hill in the upcoming session. They think it would be a distraction. If he starts using public money to defend himself, does that change that calculation at all?
It could pull him in some way, but I think it's more generally evidence that you may the supporters of Curtis Hill may think this is just a distraction, it's going away. There is a new chapter to the story, and there's going to be between now and November of 2020 if he chooses to run for re-election. So, and a credible one. I mean, they've said they're not going to use public dollars before. Now they find this contract's found. It's just a kind of a never-ending news cycle, and none of it good. And the press, with all due respect, is going to report this as it's reported. Will also report the original story as it happens. So it's a constant just recycle of the original story plus the new development, and it's endless.
Kevin Beth says he won't use public dollars. Is that the end of the story for you?
Well, it better be the end of the story, because I think kudos, the Star deserves kudos for uncovering this, and I think Scott Newman deserves it, too, for not approving the contract. But clearly it was in the works, and until it was discovered. Now the question is, does he go forward with it? Because I'd like to know where in the statute and the description of the duties of the Attorney General, it says that you ought to go out, drink too much in bars, and feel up women.
Obviously, that's not. But he can't control who the people filed against.
No, but you can do it. You can. Actually, he can, because he can do a motion to dismiss on the basis that it's not a state agency.
Automatic.
But that means he has to pay for it himself. And guess what? He's not going to do. Okay?
Well,
so there's the problem.
Well, the one thing
that's why he shouldn't be in the office, and that's why it's not a distraction. It is a problem for the state, and it's a problem for the Republican Party, which can't elect women to begin with and takes positions against women on top of that.
We just elected
and you
all
have this,
women
you what?
To our statewide elected offices.
Oh, okay. And how many women do you have in Congress? 13 of them. 13 of them.
Well, yeah, two
we
of them are from Indiana.
Yeah,
that's
we're really like 87.
Our percentage of Indiana is way higher than
Susan
the
Brooks
average.
Was demoted, too. And then you wonder why you have a problem with women. You have a problem with women because you won't step up and do
just,
what you
know what might
do.
Be fun to watch? The lawmakers can't do a whole lot, and they aren't going to do a whole lot, but there is that $5 million request from the AG's office in additional funding. Let's see
how fast that gets.
To take it back to the budgetary issue where we started,
like
let's just see how quickly that gets.
$4,900,000
I'm not thinking that's going to find a lot of breathing room in this tight budget.
All right, well, a government shutdown looms this week as congressional leaders and President Trump struggle to reach agreement on a temporary funding deal.
At issue is funding for President Trump's proposed border wall. The Senate had a deal earlier this week to fund the government for several more weeks with border security funding, but it didn't include money specifically for the wall. Trump did a 180 on the agreement, and the House passed its own version that includes $5 billion for the border wall, but that may not have support in the Senate. All that comes as a midnight deadline looms on Friday when the government will partially shut down. President Trump last week said he would take ownership of any shutdown, but now he's trying to shift blame to Democrats, even as Republicans control both chambers of Congress and the presidency.
All right, well, keeping in mind that we're taping this on Friday afternoon, and all of this could change by the time that people listen to or watch this show, John Schwanes, how much worse does this actually all get once Democrats take control of the House next year at the beginning of January?
I've shut down myself. I'm not sure I can answer. You know, it's going to create more division and more gridlock, but, I mean, having one-party control at both chambers hasn't exactly greased the skids on any of these issues. So I think you'll have more highly charged rhetoric and more sort of bluster and posturing, but the result will probably be not unlike what we've seen.
President Trump last week said, I own the shutdown. It's mine. Now he's saying it's the Democrats. Is anybody buying it?
I don't know. I will say this about this whole thing. Every time I read another story about the federal continuing resolution or whatever, I'm so appreciative of how Indiana, the process that we have for the budget, and that there's an end game, and you know, it's just not constant and hidden. I really appreciate that about Indiana lawmakers.
And the fact that we don't have a deficit, which, you know, yes, Republicans talked about ad nauseum when Barack Obama was trying to get us out of the George Bush recession, and now the deficit is exploding. And guess what isn't being talked about? And he has $5 billion he wants for a wall that everybody says isn't going to work. And I seem to recall over and over again during the campaign, Mexico will pay for it. Mexico will pay for it. I guess he hasn't.
I think I heard that.
I think I heard that, too. I think everybody heard that. What happened
to
that?
Well, the latest line on that is his new NAFTA deal. The son of NAFTA is creating the kind of... No, this is real. This is he has suggested, okay, the White House has suggested that creates funds.
So
sort
Mexico's
the,
writing a check for
no,
us?
No, they're not. No, but it's
oh,
just
okay,
going to be more money. But through the renegotiation, of course, that's the spin. But.
Mike O'Brien, if the government is shut down for any length of time, with Republicans in control of all of both chambers of Congress and the presidency at this point, do they own this one?
I don't think anyone owns these. I don't think anyone owns this one. Between the Oval Office blow up, between Democrat leaders and the president and the vice president, kind of.
You mean the throw pillow?
The back and forth on the wall. I don't understand. Frankly, we're talking about $5 billion in a multi-trillion dollar federal budget for an issue that is largely ceremonial. I mean, it's meaningful to the base, to Republican base voters. It's part of a much more sophisticated solution to immigration reform. But Democrats aren't interested, it doesn't seem like, in bringing any of that in there. It was suggested all week that they bring some kind of dreamer deal to the table, and they wouldn't do it because they either just wanted them to own the shutdown and just kick it into January when they can take control and have more leverage. But nobody owns these.
There's a pox on everybody's
house. No one's going to own this one. I think you own them in a cleaner political environment. You might own this, but it's hard to draw any straight lines
right
now.
Well, you have him to the camera saying, the shutdown is on me. Bring it on. I don't know how you're going to get beyond that. He probably shouldn't have had cameras in that meeting.
You know,
at all.
And to Nikki's point, I don't know how to talk about short-term government funding at the federal level in an original way anymore. I mean, it's just like it's this endless like 3 weeks,
cycle.
6 weeks, and that's bipartisan. We haven't done this except for the fact that the Defense Department is fully funded and isn't going to shut down in any part because we finally fully funded them for the first time in 15 or 20 years. But other than that, this is a cycle that both parties just need to get out of.
Speaking of the Defense Department, President Trump this week announced the withdrawal of troops from Syria and some from Afghanistan, which seems to have led in part to the resignation of Defense Secretary James Mattis.
The president's decision to withdraw all U.S. troops from Syria caught many, both at home and abroad, by surprise. In his announcement, Trump declared victory over ISIS, which he says is the reason to bring American service members home. A day later, Defense Secretary James Mattis submitted his resignation. In his letter, Mattis says his decision to leave is in part because he doesn't agree with the president's views on America's allies and its adversaries. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle sounded the alarm. Even Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell expressed distress at Mattis's resignation and says he agrees with many of the retired four-star general's criticisms.
Mike O'Brien, between Syria and Mattis, many lawmakers, including more than a few Republicans, have expressed concerns, and in some cases serious concerns, about this whole situation. But quite frankly, will they do anything about it? Is there anything to be done about it?
Well, you've had the senior military leaders that are a part of this administration are now leaving, have left or they're leaving, including three generals. And yes, they can do something, but it would have to take a bipartisan action of Congress now in at some point
right, in the
future,
the next, right,
with a Republican-controlled Senate and Democrat-controlled House, to override what the president has said, which is he wants to draw down on Syria, which you're right, Republican leaders have said is a terrible idea, as of military leaders. So absent Congress and taking up Syria and owning it to the previous, I mean, they would own that because they would have to go against, Republicans would have to go against the president, Democrats would have to
join
with Senate Republicans and recommit to that effort. So I don't. It's not a clean
path forward. Clear process.
See, I'm not sure it was Syria and Afghanistan as much that caused him to resign as it was his attacks on the Allies and his cozying up to China and to Russia, who the general saw as the real threat to this country. I think there's some, I hope, in the Senate, some feeling that that has to be reined in, that the Russians are, in fact, playing in our elections and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. They'll find support for that in a Democratic-controlled House. There's no question about it. And you're going to have to rein President Trump in because he seems to think that Putin is the be-all and end-all.
All right. Well, finally, the Indiana Pacers this week hired Kelly Kroskoff as their new assistant general manager, the first woman assistant GM in NBA history. Ann Delaney, how big a deal is this?
This is a big deal. She's earned this. I mean, she
long-time executive of the Fever, yeah.
Long-time executive and done a tremendous job, and she's earned it, and it's about time, and I give the Pacers credit for
that. Yeah, how cool is it to see this here at the home of basketball?
It's great. I've got two daughters. They're finally old enough to start going to a lot of these games, so it's a lot of fun. It's really good.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/iwir, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.